Hi, everyone, and welcome to another rip-roaring episode of Art and Labor. We are the podcast for art and cultural workers and their struggles. I am OK Fox.
And I'm Lucia Love. And we're joined here by a guest.
We're joined here by Michael DeForge.
Hey. Hi, everyone.
Michael DeForge, of course, is a cartoonist, musician, all-around great guy from Toronto.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Right. You're Canadian. That's something people ask you a lot about.
Yeah.
Really?
I've done books that are so much about like Toronto or Canada. And then when I do book tours in the States, all my questions are about Canada.
Yeah.
So I feel like
Canadian. What's that like?
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard there are hospitals there.
We basically, you know, like, we have our woke bae, Justin Trudeau.
Oh, fuck.
Who's the savior of, you know, magical utopia.
He wears good costumes, right?
He described it as an enthusiasm for costumes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. A
little too enthusiastic there, but scale it back.
I'm a normal human. Look.
I heard that, I actually did not know this, that there are no term limits for Trudeau, right?
His dad was prime minister for like 12 years or something.
Sick.
Yeah. Which is like, so, like, I was just on my mind with, I was arguing with my older brother about Bolivia till like 3 in the morning yesterday.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Oh.
It was like really
good.
Stupid.
Yeah. That's fun.
It was awful. But it's just like,
is your brother like, hey, you know what? The government's the government. Why don't you stop poking around in there?
He's like, the authorities said that there was election tampering. And yeah. I'm like, what authority? The OAS? Like, are you kidding me
now? Whoever is holding the conch gets to make the decision. I don't know. Like,
he's like, oh, well, yeah, you're denying the Bolivian people agency. And I'm like, excuse me? Like, their Supreme Court upheld the elimination of the term limits. Like, this is all legal. Like, the coup is, oh, my God. It was just, like, so frustrating. So
it's,
that was
it's
on
bizarre
my mind.
That, too, like, now suddenly these people who care about, like, they're all, like, the nuance people or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Have chosen, like, term limits as the one thing that they apparently care so much about.
It's
like,
so wild. One thing I said to my brother was, I hope the military knocks on Bloomberg's door next.
I mean, as far as the term limits thing goes, it's totally displacement, you know? Mm. It's like displacement from our own underlying fears that we're not going to be able to control, like, the 2020 cycle. Mm-hmm. And there's just going to be this whole thing of, like, oh, right, we finally managed to start impeachment proceedings, but they're also being met with Trump's, like, campaign to run again. And so it's just like, oh, well, I mean, we should really worry about, like, these term limits that are going on everywhere. Like, how could, I mean, do you think people can just come and go as they please? I mean, we've really got to put our foot down somewhere else.
It's just like these law and order types, these like, oh, we got to respect the authorities. And it's like, the authorities are not neutral in this at all. And I don't know where you're getting this. Like, and it's just like so frustrating.
I learned it in civics class.
Western Civ 101.
Yeah.
It's a fucking joke. Sorry, that was a big old tangent, but
yeah,
that was
whoa.
Very much on my mind because I was listening to that guy Rob Rousseau, who's also a Canadian lefty guy, and I did not know that there was no term limits in Canada at all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 50 years from now, I'll still have to be putting up with like Justin Trudeau's socks that say
no.
Like "I accept you" or whatever.
So Michael's in town. He has a reading tomorrow at Desert Island for a new book. You're so prolific. You do like 2 books a year. It's like nuts. But what is this newest book?
I try my
book?
Best, yeah. The newest book is called Stunt. It's A smaller one than a lot of my books. It's like 70 pages or so, and it's with Koyama Press, and it's part of the final publishing line of Koyama Press. Yeah.
But understandable.
Yeah, I'm like happy. I'm sad Koyama Press is ending, but I'm happy that my friend Anne gets to take a vacation for like the first time since I've known her. So, yeah.
Yeah, the hardest working person in indie comics.
Yes, definitely.
But yeah, I was thinking about, because I wore my same hat shirt today to commemorate like your work, because this is like legendary blog, same hat. It was like that's who introduced me to your work initially. That's where I first saw Loose and Thickness.
Oh yeah,
back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ryan is like, I go back with him. I guess I technically started interacting with him when I was in high school because of the same hat live journal.
Yeah, I was in high school too.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So wild. And so Lucia was basically this blog for Comic Obscura. Do you know it?
Oh, yeah. But when I was in high school, I was just looking at porn. I don't know.
Well, that's fair enough because Thickness was porn also.
Oh, that's cool. Well, different porn then.
Wait, they made porn before that? Weird. Hard to imagine. Hard to, sure.
Yeah, sure. But yeah, you've done tons of really great stuff. Since Loose, you've done work with not only Koyama Press that you mentioned, but also Drawn in Quarterly and Youth in Decline, which is Ryan Sands, who we were talking about, who did Same Hat, went on to do an imprint called Youth in Decline, which is still active. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're just all over the place. It's amazing. But one thing that we really want to talk to you here on Art and Labor was the Cartoonists Against Amazon and the open letter that you helped organize recently.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us more about how that came about?
Sure. Colleen Tai reached out to me because we were both fairly outspoken about our dislike of both, like, the amount the comics community already and the comics industry already, like, relies on Amazon and has all these connections to Amazon, and then the way Comixology, which is a subsidiary of Amazon, has, like, been trying to, like, get a little bit further and further in. So it's like publishing, and it's also a sponsor of more and more comics festivals. So Colleen reached out to me about drafting some sort of letter, and then Roxanne Palmer and Sage Persing also got in on the drafting of it. We sent it around and eventually published it as a kind of like early step of registering dissent of specifically like comics and small press festivals who continue to accept Comixology or Amazon as a partner or a sponsor.
We talked about this on our podcast. If people, long-time listeners of us, there's probably a lot of new people listening right now, but long-time listeners of us might have heard an episode that we talked about the Festival Workers Association, which I'm part of, and our kind of principles that we presented to Small Press Expo two years ago now at this point, sort of thinking about this because basically Comixology kind of ramped up their presence in this way where they started to offer like full printing services, which would just like cut out all of these extremely small presses is this like really wonderful ecosystem that we've created like through these different like independent festivals, like much different than like a Comic-Con. It's like, it's very community based, and like, you know, a lot of us were really afraid of that like big arm of Amazon coming in and eliminating all of these like smaller folks.
Well, especially just because I've noticed, just as someone who's like sort of tangentially involved with I appreciate comics, but I don't really like make them or like chronicle them. I just love them.
Totally.
But I've noticed a lot that, like, you know, when we were at the protest against the NYPD last week, you know, there was a block of cartoonists that we saw that were like marching with everyone. And it was sort of that feeling like, oh, not only are they sort of like the independent creators that are trying to make a more like, I don't know, a substantial living independently, right? They're mm-hmm. also like overtly political and interested in human rights and, like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a rich history of the of cartoonists who are leftists. Like, I was just looking at my Art Young coffee table book this morning, thinking about the trajectory of this stuff. And I saw that the Chuck Jones guillotine protest that he led has been going around. Like, this is all, like, totally in line with, like, history, and, like, it makes sense that we can, like, channel this in our current organizing.
Right.
And, and it's, like, been gaining traction, too, in other arts communities, and, like, you know, writers and cartoonists, it sucks that, like, our industry has become so embedded with Amazon where, like, we can't immediately get every publisher to, like, stop selling books on Amazon or whatever. But I think it's important that there are these, like, early steps. I think it was a year or maybe 2 years ago, there was, I forget the name of the prize, but, like, a half dozen Quebecois authors who were all nominated for the same prize found out that prize that year was being sponsored by Amazon, and they were all able to basically, like, recuse themselves, and they got support from, like, both local booksellers and the Writers Union of Quebec. I forget the actual, like, acronym for it or what the official title of it is. And they got support from them, and the prize dropped Amazon as a sponsor. And, like, since Cartoonists Against Amazon published our letter, there's been the, like, No Music for ICE campaign.
Yeah, I was going to mention to you, because I was at the, or me and Lucia. Sorry. You were also there. I wasn't trying to do a Lucia erasure, which I'm totally.
I'm just spaced out, man. I'm spaced out in the back, but I'm there.
But I was talking to Joey from Downtown Boys about the Musicians Against ICE last night, and he was saying that he was directly inspired by the cartoonists.
And it's cool, like, because we're hoping that, like, we can all work in collaboration, and then this also emboldens, like, not just sort of anti-Amazon organizing, but in general, like, for artists to feel like they have more agency about, like, who we end up getting in bed with, and, like, when we talk about festivals or who we're what our distribution networks are or whatever, that we, like, feel like we actually know what we're complicit in, and we know whose money is involved when we say yes or no to these things. Because it sucks that, like, so much of these things end up boiling down to, like, well, I participate in this thing or I don't. And, like,
It's just so complicated. Sorry to jump in.
No, not at all.
Because, I mean, it's definitely something that I think about in terms of, like, the moral framework around accepting money from wealth. You know, it's not the same as, like, you know, like, okay, and I exchanged the same $10 and it doesn't, there's I don't feel like you know, the same crushing forces of evil acting on me as if I am selling a piece of artwork that I'm never really sure where it's going, or if any wealth is, like, actually, like, good or positive. But it's, I don't know, I guess, like, I'm wondering if I could frame this into a question, like, when you discuss ways of, like, fortifying yourself or, like, protecting yourself against dealing with Amazon, is there a way to, like, set up a structure where if you say, we are not working with this platform, then, like, if the resale or if something happens, like, if your stuff just goes on into the system anyway, like, doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of, like, protesting it if it's just like, oh, well, I can buy the book on Amazon from like a middleman seller, mm-hmm. and then I can just be like, what? I had no idea there was a protest, because Amazon is also doing the thing where they like will change search results for stuff, and they'll just like, they have a really good way of burying news. And I'm just wondering if there's like any ways around that, or if that's like something that we can even talk about on a recording.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the way around it yet. Like, if anyone figures it out, please let me know. But I think it's a thing where, like, in the meantime, trying to build up, like, alternate distribution network. Like, it's hard to...
Well, it's
to...
like the festival is an alternate distribution network, right?
Yeah, exactly. Which is why, like, it's such a... Like, especially, like, a small press festival, and we talk about, like, zines or self-publishing, like, these are the alternate networks that we should be, like, keeping... Like, not to be precious about it, like, keeping safe from Amazon, like, keeping that space as, like, our own, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, we have at least have that where we can go and, you know, like, to our local one, and, you know, they all make the circuit, the small presses make the circuit, and we can be like, oh, I've been meaning to pick this up. I love picking it up from you directly. You make the most money out of it.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. I love the idea that, like, we could all just also be having, like, the system of accountability put in place by working on, like, on a face-to-face, like, local sort of organization level. But... Yeah, I mean, it's something that just, like, I'm curious, because I'm always sort of, like, keeping one foot in the door of the possibilities of legislation, and wondering if there's any people out in the whole internet who knows, like, can it be penalized to be, like, a middleman seller who is just, like, picking up stuff and then... selling it on Amazon or something. You know what I mean? Like,
Well, it's like paintings work, right? Like how, like you sell it yourself, but then somebody else flips it for double.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You don't get any of that cut.
But then there's something that you can do that's sort of like in fine arts, if your work goes to auction and the people who sell it were not supposed to sell it because they made some sort of an agreement with their art dealers or something, you know, like, cause that's like kind of how the structure works in, there's no written framework. It's everything is like always a handshake or whatever, but you can put a lot of pressure on a collector who wants to sell your work to like possibly manipulate your market. By like putting them on blacklists and making it really difficult for them to like show up in public. So there's like a lot of, you know, I guess that's sort of like the Stephen Simkowitz story, where it was just like the social ostracizing. I don't know how to mold that word.
It's tough when it gets smaller and smaller, right? Like when it gets to like small edition prints and then widely distributed books, and then like, so it's hard to like be like, where is the cutoff? Because I'm not going to name names, but there are some people in zines and comics who have rare editions of people's like handmade artist books, and will just like flip them, like you know, get them autographed and flip them and like stuff like that. Like it happens all the time. and secondhand markets are just so weird. I mean, as someone who works at a vintage store, it's just like, like where does that stuff? I know there's like a Marxist analysis of this, but I'm just not that familiar with it.
Oh yeah. The accrual of value takes many unexpected twists and turns.
Cause like, well, and then you're dead and then it's your estate and then.
Yeah. And maybe you did something really cool after you made the thing that made the thing more cool because your future got better.
Yeah. Or like you died and that, yeah.
That made it valuable.
The coolest thing of all.
That's what I'm counting on. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm like an assassin for cartoonists. Like, this is all a trap.
But Michael, I read that you were sort of like accustomed to getting rid of your original artwork. Like after you make a comic or something, do you consciously think about those sort of different avenues of like the way that things get sold or the way that like people are pervy about collecting stuff?
Yeah, like for the original art thing, like now it's at a point where most of my work is done digitally. So it's just sketchbook work that I have. and I don't frequently, like, there's less of a demand, and I don't frequently sell the sketchbook things. I did a sale last year, but, like, that was, like, unique circumstances for a fundraiser. But I have, it's sort of become a little weird making zines, because a lot of things that I've made for free or just for, like, distributing to friends, I will see on a secondary market, and it, like, it bums me out, of course. But yeah. Like, it's not going to stop me from making them. Like, and obviously, right. Like, more people.
I quit.
Yeah. Like, I see, like, one on eBay go for, like, $50, and it makes me really sad. But I know, like, I actually made, like, 49 others that went to people who, like, presumably just have it in their bathroom the way it's meant to be stored. And
when you said it was going for 50, I was imagining that, like, insane, like, pamphlet thing you made. That
oh, yeah. Just,
like... What was it, like, dog art or something?
Like, how to draw my dog.
My dog, yeah, I love that.
I do a series of pamphlets that,
they're so good.
That are, like,
this is a deep cut.
Yeah, there's, like, a pamphlet series I do that are, like, my name isn't on them. They just distribute them in different, like, YMCA lobbies and, like nice. Laundromats and stuff, yeah.
When I was in Toronto, I was very inspired by this particular Motel 6 in, like, the very, like, in the Dragon Mall, is that what it's called?
Or there's Dragon City, but I think the motel you're thinking about is Chinatown Center.
Chinatown Center,
like a block
yeah.
south of, yeah.
China, and it has the best lobby, and, like, apparently, like, artists have done things in that lobby, but it's, like, this seems, like, so perfect to do something. It's just, like, it has these big, huge windows, and, like, it's, like, kind of communist architecture, like, there's, like, a courtyard that, like, folks actually made an anti-gentrification garden in. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We're talking about that with Eric.
Yes. Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. T-Base? Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm not involved in T-Base at all, but, like, a campaign I'm involved in, the 15 for Fairness campaign, recently hosted, like, a Know Your Rights workshop at T-Base. And, like, T-Base
so nice.
Rules. Yeah. It's, like, a cool, like, community space. And, yeah, it's, like, right across from, there's, like, there used to be an arcade that, like, 11 years ago, I'd go to, like, play Marvel versus Capcom, and it's closed. But it's now, like, I get to go and see T-Base and, like, not feel as depressed that
That's
there's
so
no more,
nice,
like,
though.
Dance Dance Revolution machine anymore.
Oh, yeah.
What's T-Base going to do in the winter?
I mean, it'll still... Yeah, well, it's indoors.
It...
The garden's outdoors.
Yeah.
And then,
oh,
like, the actual thing is indoors. Yeah, it's, like, next to, like, a giant food court. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize they also had indoor space. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I was there, like, a little before that happened, most recently. But that's a really exciting project. I think it's, yeah, like, you know, basically, like, people were going to come develop that area, and then the community came together and just made this garden. And, like, just for folks who might not know what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's a space in, like, the heart of Toronto's Chinatown that was, like, a longstanding business. And when that business went under, it was purchased sort of by, like, concerned young people who wanted to keep the space as, like, something for actual residents of Chinatown. So they do a lot of, like, explicitly anti-gentrification work, including, yeah, like, this anti-gentrification garden in the courtyard of the mall. But then the venue itself holds a lot of, like, it'll do, like, both arts things, but it also has things like, yeah, like a tenants' rights workshop, Know Your Rights at Work workshop, or I know they have, like, weekly Smash Brothers tournaments and, like, karaoke. Oh. So they have, like, a lot of cool, like, community-focused events at this space.
Cool.
T-Base, I'm a fan.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Like, yeah. Sorry, I'm just...
No, that's... I mean, it is something that is very difficult to come by at this point. Like... I don't know, just, I think yesterday, because we were at the Downtown Boys, and we were, like, you know, at Union Pool, and realizing, like, oh yeah, I remember just hanging out at this space, like, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then just, like, the ways that, you know, if the space is still intact, like, you see different, like, aspects of the management change, or you see things just sort of start warping in ways that are, like, not expected, but then ultimately, like, I guess I should have seen these things coming, and, like,
yeah.
It's just nice.
Walking over from the Marcy stop is kind of a bummer, because you pass, like, seven disgusting luxury towers, like, on the way.
I do realize I have that thing where I've lived in Toronto long enough that, like, 50% of my conversation is like mourning something that closed like 6 years, like, you know, like I have friends who have no idea what I'm talking about. Yeah. And I don't want to be like a old person who's just like reminiscing or complaining about things. But I also feel like there is an element where you want to remember, like, it's very fresh, but a space called Faith Void just closed. And it was like a punk and zine shop that also held a lot of like all ages concerts. And Faith Void itself was kind of an offshoot of another space that closed, like Sheebie-Jeebies, that lasted for like a little while. And like
Double Land shut down.
Yeah, like all these places. And it sucks that like really soon it'll just be like a smaller and smaller group of people who remember it. And like, I want to at least have some space to like mourn and grieve. And then also like it's instructive for when trying to start or maintain new spaces, like to remember the old ones. Because hopefully it's not just like an endless cycle of like trying these things and then it inevitably be getting shut down by cops or real estate developers or whatever.
Like here, it's like a collective group will open a space and then it'll shut down for whatever money reasons. And then a much more like, I don't know, mainstream or capitalist venue will just pop up in its corpse, basically. Mm-hmm. And then it's like we all still use it because where can we go now?
Development, you know, it has its own logic and it's going to subsume us all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Toronto, of course, has the Beguiling as well. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no equivalent to the Beguiling, in my opinion. Like, it's large. It has space for shows. It's like the comic store in Toronto. It's got like it has stuff for every type of comics and small multiples and children's books and all this stuff, and it's just a treasure to hang on to.
Yes, yeah.
Or perhaps a model to bring here.
I feel like when we were younger, Forbidden Planet was more like the Beguiling.
Oh, I know.
Like it really was.
That's the one, like, by the Strand?
Is yeah.
That? Okay.
Yeah. But it used to be on the corner, the opposite corner.
And it used to be, because they still have, like, a very small local comics section, but it's so disorganized and, like, kind of left in the dust. Mm. And then they used to have, like, a pretty, I don't know, their DVD collection is still pretty cool. Like, if you ever want to find a really offbeat sort of, like, a grindhouse movie. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know if their downstairs is open anymore.
No, it's not.
Yeah, like never. It's just like,
it's a Funko Pop
or something.
It's a Funko Pop now.
Ugh,
it's just a big, you just walk in, it's just a giant Funko Pop.
Dude, I
that's
hate
all that's
that.
In there.
Oh my God. I never want to see another bobblehead again of anything.
But it used to have these big, beautiful window displays. Mm. It used to have a manga and games floor. Mm-hmm. On its own. It had a new manga section, which it has not had for years, and I complain about it literally every time I go in there.
Wow. Hey, welcome.
We're old
nerds. We're still nerds, but now we're old.
Let's just dictate like our negative Yelp reviews for different businesses.
Yeah, if you would like to borrow these form letters, we've made complaints for you, and you can just copy paste.
Back in my day, hold on to these things. If listeners wherever you are have a place that you love, like, gotta treasure them and like fight for them, like,
oh yeah, and send us pictures of them, because we'll post them on the Art and Labor Twitter and Instagram so that everybody can share in the memory of their favorite places.
we'll make a GeoCities like web page for our, like a graveyard.
Yeah,
of,
yeah,
like yeah. There'll be a graveyard section and there'll be like a like visit these places section.
Mm-hmm.
But what sucks about that is that like for a while 4chan was targeting DIY spaces.
Ugh. Yeah.
And there was a website that was doing a similar thing, and then people were using it to target.
That happened to a space in Toronto where, like, I think it was trade. Like, they were wondering why there was an increased interest from the cops in this one space or
after
whatever inspectors. And yeah, and it was, I think someone was like, yeah, it was some 4chan people who
makes sense. Yeah, you can't use a map just to get to somewhere. You have to use it for some kind of fascist bullshit.
Yeah.
Of course.
Gosh. Sorry.
I know, it's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot.
But, I mean, a lot of your work talks about gentrification. Like, I don't know, like, leaving Richards Valley is, like, so fun and nice, but then it'll hit you with, like, okay, so there are all these little, this is about, like, they're in this park. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you want to talk about that more.
Yeah, the premise is that a group of animals and humans have a cult in a park, which is like a real-life park in Toronto. And then eventually some of the animals are expelled for breaking cult rules, and they're trying to find a home in Toronto, and they keep kind of bouncing around abandoned buildings or, like, art squats and DIY spaces and coming up against, like, just other opposing kind of malevolent groups and gentrifiers. And a lot of it is about mourning a Toronto that, like, if I'm speaking honestly, like, hasn't really existed for a little while, mm-hmm. or, like, it's been on a lifeline for a little while. And, you know, I moved to Toronto, like, 13 years ago, and even when I moved, it was sort of at the tail end of mm-hmm. a time when it was still affordable enough that you could, like, experiment and carve out little spaces for yourself, and it's just, like, so much harder now.
But at the same time, do you have this, because I'm constantly, like, sort of thinking about my Canadian artist friends and my American artist friends and, like, kind of what they're able to do versus what we're able to do in these states. And do you think, like having more of, like, a safety net and having actual, like, public funding for arts, like, kind of allows a richer, maybe more diverse, maybe, like, more sustainable?
Oh, I mean, definitely, yeah. Like, having, like, both having healthcare, having, like, I apply to grants and I get some of that. Like, all that stuff is huge. Like, that's
What's
a huge
that
help.
Like?
Yeah. Yeah, like, and yeah. Even, you know, Toronto is, when I was midway through working on Richards Valley, like, some of the stuff with the Sidewalk Labs campaign was announced, which is, like, Endeavor. It's that shitty, like, Google smart city thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I forgot
So, like,
about that.
Google's been...
They're trying to privatize the waterfront.
Yeah, they're trying to, like, have their own little Google city with, like, all these CCTV cameras and tiles that measure, like, the amount of traffic that crosses each tile and smart cars or whatever.
Is it gonna be those tiles that generate energy, too, though? Because, you know, if so, I'm down.
I don't know exactly.
Extreme policing. Well, I can also be a battery, sign me up.
Well, the lithium from that battery, funny enough, is going to come from deprivatizing Bolivia. So,
yeah, it's all working out.
It's this whole, like, yeah. Then there's like a block side, shout out to the Block Sidewalk campaign in Toronto that has.
Like, I meant reprivatizing. denationalizing the lithium, oil, and gas in Bolivia. Like, it's a huge reason why the coup is happening.
Yeah. Dude, you gotta get
it's because of the tech
metals.
Companies.
Sorry.
Yeah, no.
Oh, no, yeah. But yeah, like, there was, like, some, you know, it's still an ongoing thing, but there's some pushback on, like, at least the amount of land and the, like, it's not, they haven't been able to just say, like, we don't want Google here, like, fuck off, which would be ideal, but they tried to, like, make a play for, like, way more land than they initially proposed, and way less transparency. So, like, a group called Block Sidewalk has been campaigning to at least, like, contain the threat, if not, like, unfortunately, it's not going to just be used for something useful, like community housing or anything. It's still probably going to be a stupid smart city, but it's going to be a smaller thing. But, like, it means that there is, even though Toronto is going the same direction as, you know, any city like New York or San Francisco or wherever, there's, like, enough pockets of dissent that I still don't feel like it's a hopeless cause.
Yeah, I mean, I think the anti-Amazon campaigns here are going to start to ramp up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're building a new plant in MassPeth and mm-hmm. other places. And
yeah, they're basically just building, instead of having one centralized headquarters, they bought up a whole bunch of like separate plots of land. Mm-hmm. And
it's bad, and we shouldn't take these concessions. Toronto shouldn't take that concession. Yeah. We shouldn't take these concessions.
But the anti-Amazon organizing here was an inspiration for some of the like anti-Google organizing in Toronto too. And like
we were inspired by the anti-Google organizing in Germany.
Yeah.
Like, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's fucking like, rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it is weird that we're always like constantly fighting now the same like monolithic corporations, and I wonder at what point are we going to be able to like build broader coalitions along those lines of like mm-hmm. international mm-hmm. Struggle, or like, you know, the way that we're seeing all of these different protests breaking out in places mm-hmm. and like, I don't know, I wonder if there even is a way, because like we still have a sense of, you know, maintaining like our cultures individually and having that space for ourselves to like keep these identities of like, you know, joking around but saying like, oh well, what is it to be Canadian versus what is it to be American versus what is it to be German? And then if you do decide to like try and build this mega coalition, do you like, what parts of those identities have to be set aside? And like,
that's all the lefty infighting is.
Yeah,
right?
No, exactly. And it's, yeah, so it's like now we're looking at that challenge, I think, in mm-hmm. inherent in this like struggle of seeing the way that the corporation's capable of like, you know, it doesn't lose power by...
They're all global.
Yeah.
They're all global and identity.
Unified, and they have like no problem with just being like, yeah, we're Google, we use this one font. Like, you know, we're Amazon, we love the bald man. Like, it's, they like don't have a problem with it. And we're all like, but our culture and like our small press. Mm-hmm. And but that's the thing that we're fighting for. And I just wonder if there is like a structure that we can now start to develop that like keeps all the things we're fighting for intact while also like finding that unifying kernel to like actually
mm-hmm. yeah
make it this next step.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you want, I don't know. I think we should all get wacky with it and I'll speak Esperanto or whatever.
Yeah. Woo. I'm for it. You know, we all write in Wingdings now. Yeah.
That is, I don't know. I don't have a clear answer. It's a really tough.
No,
question.
I mean, yeah, that's like the million-dollar question. Yeah. Sorry, I keep like my mind just keeps going to that because I feel like a lot of the time, you know, because we're having these conversations with people who are building, like building the local community and doing things that are really strong and supportive for everyone that they can reach. But mm-hmm. then it's also like difficult to know that without stringing these things together, we're not gonna be able to gain enough like manpower to make a front.
Yeah, especially because we're always just catching up. We're like, I mean, it's obviously here too, and the feeling in Toronto or in Ontario lately is just like working so hard to just win back stuff we lost, like win things we thought we already won.
Yeah,
and it's like, that's important to get those back, but it's also important to like ask for more and feel like we can embolden people to like envision something a little more revolutionary.
Right. I mean, mm-hmm. this is the thing, like, you know,
that was the thing that I was just edging around.
Okay. Yes.
Revolution.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Here we go.
Is anybody into that?
Like, who's game? But like these things, like the anti-Amazon letter, the massive increase of like media, arts, cultural unions, like Hearst just union this morning, which is like the huge magazine conglomerate that's like, I don't know, what is it, like 25 imprints or whatever, just mm-hmm. unionized. Like, it's building, it's happening. We've built way more than we had this time last year, which is very inspiring.
Yeah, we're definitely picking up the slack. I mean, it's just kind of funny though, because we're like, yeah, all right. Oh man, I'm not getting paid $7 anymore. You take that, big bad man. Like, all right.
Well, it's like I don't know if you want to talk more about Fight for 15, but it's like, you know, we fight for 15, then 15's not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's like the surreal thing in Ontario is that we won the 15, and it was sort of exciting that we could like, okay, we won the $15 minimum wage, let's do more. And then our last premiere instead froze it at 14 when it was supposed to go up. And it's like going to be frozen there till like 2025. And you like cut a bunch of things. So yeah, it's this weird, like we're fighting for like sick days. We already won. And like, it feels like such small potatoes. And it's really important still, because these are like really, the fact that we won it and then lost it means that like we can win it again. And even though it feels like small potatoes, it would make like a meaningful material difference in so many people's lives. But like, yeah, the amount of money it cost to live in Toronto was like way higher than $15 an hour, and it feels insane to still be fighting for this, like,
right, yeah,
very, you know, yeah,
yeah. I guess that's kind of, I get bummed out a lot by the same things everyone else gets bummed out about. I don't mean to be driving into the rainstorm or whatever, but it's like, yeah, I guess I see that there are gains being made, and basically it is like every union seems to be people just agreeing that shit is fucked. They're like, oh, wait, no, we see that shit is fucked. And then they all like shake hands together and it's like, yes, we all agree that shit is fucked. Okay, now what? You know?
I think we're building to a general strike.
Personally. I think, yeah. I mean, I think it's exciting. I'm ready to like see where the next steps go, and I'm happy that like more people are starting to find out like that they are not going to be spared. Mm-hmm. It's not, yeah, it's I also need to get into this.
I think we will really start winning when we have like a protest, like, you know, against police brutality, and people start just leaving their homes and joining them, like they do in Chile, like, you know.
Oh yeah.
And I don't think we're there yet, because it's like.
But it was cool, actually. Do you remember on the pod when I was joking around, like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we did something where, like, people just, you know, jump the turnstiles or, like, open the door
for
each
it.
Other
mm-hmm.
and stuff?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone is on that page. It's great.
I want a Canada and statewide, like, fair strike so bad. And, like, I feel like we can all taste it. I want it so bad.
Yeah.
But I think we're, like, not that far away from it, you know? Like,
we're really not. Mm-hmm. Like, we have, like, our mayor being... That was so infuriating to me, like, the other day, was the mayor gave a statement to Gothamist that was like,
oh God,
you know, everybody is comforted by the police in the trains. Like,
dude, it's completely insane. Did you see also that there was this, like, horrible murderer from the LAPD that is, like, now heading the Chicago PD? Yeah. It's like, oh, and like... The messaging around it. I forget this dude's name, but he's a total dirtbag. It's just like, oh, of course, like, I really respect the fact that people of color need to have, like, a good relationship with the police, and I'm, like, totally willing to be the face of that. And, you know, it's all about, like, what you need. And, of course, I know that because I'm from L.A.
Oh, God.
Jesus, like, fucking what? Right. It reminds me of the police chief in Philly who had resigned over, like, a sexual assault scandal. He was, like, a total fucking scumbag. And, like, everyone was like, oh, he's the best police chief ever because he's black and he's from the neighborhood and he knows. And it's just, like,
identity doesn't cut that mustard. You can't.
It's not. He was, like, he was hard. And, he, like, right before he resigned in disgrace, he, like, led this, like, insane raid, to me it seemed like a totally illegal raid on, like, some folks in Nicetown who had legally purchased, arms. And, like...
Hey, it's not an illegal raid if it's conducted by the authorities.
I'm gonna lose my mind.
Oh.
I'm I'm going to lose my mind.
Oh, well, let's reel it back. Let's reel it back and talk about. Let's talk about cults.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I don't know. Wait, let's reel it back. Like back to like art and like things that like give us hope. Because like I don't know, going to like looking at your art, going to Downtown Boys yesterday, I do feel like renewed. I felt like I was in a very weird funk, and I feel like it is like we need to be putting this stuff out there. Mm-hmm. Like, and it does really help people and lift people up, and like I know like even like doing this podcast like every week like helps me like process how seriously fucked everything is.
Yeah, and I do sometimes like I find myself when I get cynical about like how useful art can ever be, and especially like how easily we're co-opted and all the usual ways that art can feel like doing absolutely nothing, which is also fine. I want like, you know, it's doing useless stuff is cool too. Yeah. Yes, but cool. Like, well,
yeah, there's
then,
a whole philosophy around it.
Yeah, but like then there's like these moments where you do feel like from art or things related to art, like this sort of revolutionary potential and exuberance, and like it feels incredible. Like there was Toronto Public Library recently. I don't know if you followed any of this shit. Yeah, Toronto Public Library like recently agreed to host this like transphobic speaking event. And there was like a big backlash, and the library like doubled down. The like all the librarians and their union like made a formal statement against it. Like a ton of authors were out against it. The general public was outraged. This is also like 2 years after they hosted a neo-Nazi event there.
Yeah.
But at the sort of like big counter protest, this one group in Toronto, Artists for Climate, Migrant Justice, and Indigenous Sovereignty, shout out to ACJMS, or yeah. Whatever their acronym is.
Shout out.
Yeah, shout out. They like, one of the co-organizers of this counter protest, they had this moment where they used the people's mic to read the poetry of non-binary and trans poets. And it was like this wonderful thing where a very large crowd of people, like a couple hundred people, all like repeating the poetry of like friends and comrades and like poets who I hadn't heard before, was this like moment where the use of art felt reimagined. And like the potential of what like a library could be or what a protest could be like felt like expanded. And it's like it felt like a nice reminder of like when I do get cynical about art.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it feels like, you know, it's just horrible that because I feel like the cynicism definitely comes from just this backlash of dealing with capitalism in general and like dealing with the struggles of life. And like, you know, when I think about a world without having experiences with poetry or seeing music or, you know, getting to participate in image making, it's like, what, I don't actually know what people live for except for this. So like, why would you not? And then whenever I feel bad about it, it's usually coupled with like, oh, I hate the market around these things, or oh, I hate the way that that person is using this platform to express something, or the way that it gets hijacked, or the way that, like, you know, usually all the negative feelings I have around culture has to do with somehow like political manipulation or like capital manipulation. And like, and it's, yeah, I just feel like, I don't know, it's important to make those distinctions or something. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. It's like, that's, yeah, I mean, it's such a great way of putting it. Like, that's what we're fighting for.
Yeah.
Like, and it's, it's real.
It's actually. I mean, if more people would just make cartoons on the job, maybe that's like where the revolution could start. Mm-hmm. Just putting that out there, you know,
doodle in the margins. Whatever.
Yeah. Do you have a job? Are you a doctor? Draw on your patients.
Yeah. Whomst among us hasn't opened a Photoshop file for a band flyer while on the clock.
Yes. Yes. If you haven't, then consider living differently.
Like, if our jobs are going to severely underpay us, we need to make this back somehow. And, like, yeah. It's an important part of, like, that you should consider in your work day.
Oh, God.
Whether
yeah.
it's just, like, finding a way to consume art while you're at work or make it, like, either or. It's extremely important because, like, they're not paying us enough. Like, it's, and, like, you know, even if we win, like, I was going to say this before, but, you know, in New York, we did win $15, but so many, myself including, people I know work under the table, work like weird illegal situations.
Oh yeah, I'm about to get into some new bullshit.
Oh, fuck.
Apparently this next job that I'm gonna work, so I for some reason for years I've just been getting paid through like Venmo. It's just like the way that my life works.
Okay,
but now this next one is gonna be, it's gonna be that way again. I just show up and they're like, here's a check. Now we got to work. And it's going to be, I'm going to drive a truck.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I've never driven a truck before. But I'm
sure
it's
what type of truck?
It's not a big, it's okay. Not going to be like a.
Do you need a license?
I don't need a special truck license. It's a small truck. So the axle is different and it just has like a different, it doesn't have a fucking crazy gear system.
But you'll be able to try out different bathrooms around the city.
Yeah. Well, all on the road. Oh, I'm going to Boston.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Just going to, so if I disappear after Thursday, it's because I was kidnapped at a truck stop. But yeah, it's funny because, you know, it's just like people texting each other and I haven't even met the people that I'm working for, but they're like, so you can drive this thing? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, I'll just do it. And they're like, all right, cool. You got a license? Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah.
And this is what we work with no safety net. Like, yeah. We just take the gig. We just take the gig.
That's like, yeah, for, yeah, if anybody's wondering what we're talking about with these parameters, like, yeah, just believe in yourself.
paid through Venmo.
Yeah.
Perfect. Oh, God.
I've been wanting to figure out some way to talk about, like, small business minimum wage, which is, you know, different than, like, I'm sure people have talked about this. I've seen people talking about this before, but, like, just, like, the idea of, like, small businesses not paying minimum wage is actually helping gentrification because the larger chain restaurants are required to pay minimum wage. And then, like, so basically, like...
Like a small restaurant that's underpaying, like, their servers, do you mean? Or, like...
Well, yeah, I mean, like... Yeah, for whatever reason, you're getting paid under the table. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm just going to work for Applebee's, and Applebee's will actually pay me.
Well, it's like a vicious cycle, though, right? Because the small business doesn't have enough money to give people because they're trying to compete with Applebee's.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a back and forth. It's just, like, awful, and I don't know how to break it.
Break Applebee's.
Yeah.
But there's always one answer. There's always one. Mm-hmm. It's the scariest one, but we have to break Applebee's.
Yeah, yes. We have to break Applebee's. And then I think we also have to break the rent laws, like all these things that are like gutting the small businesses too, like I think also need to be broken, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and attitudes have to change just in general. Because like the small business argument of like not being able to pay a living wage to their employees and expecting sympathy just because they're like a small business, like that has
to change.
And like the way everyone romanticizes any small business, no matter what or how shitty they are or whatever. Like, and I think the tide is turning on that, but that's like a hard, like talking like face to face to people about like minimum wage things. It's constantly this like, what about the small businesses? And it's like, yeah, I'm not like against any small business.
You're
but like what about?
Bud, I'm a small business.
Like a lot of people work for small. Like, why wouldn't the dishwasher for the small business also get some amount of your sympathy too? Like, I don't understand. You know? Yeah.
Totally. Totally.
I just think, you know, we just really need to double down on this wealth tax thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking at all of the ways that. I don't know, I forget what article it was, but it was like this breakdown of how much money Bill Gates would have if the wealth tax being proposed was instated at the beginning of his business venture, and he would still have, after, like, they, you know, just like running the numbers of his profit margins and everything, and mm-hmm. then like applying the taxes to it in the hypotheticals, it's like he would still have $7 billion today.
Yeah. Which but would only mean, $7
billion. Yeah, exactly. Which would mean that, like, what is it? Like $97 billion would be like
freed
reintroduced
up.
Into the economy. Mm-hmm. And it's yeah. just like, yeah, what is wrong? What is wrong with that? Like, yeah. it would be yeah. so simple. There's such a minority of people that are, like, keeping us in this predicament. It's insane
to me
that we're struggling with small businesses.
Like, thank you. I'm sorry, but, like, the people who are buying the, like, Elizabeth Warren spoiler candidate
oh, yeah.
need to get over it. Like, it's so clear, like, how one candidate talks to these billionaires and how the other one does. Like, Elizabeth Warren's like, oh, no, Bill Gates, like, by all means, it's not going to be of, like, whatever she said. Like, it's
well,
not going
yeah.
to be. Of course it's not going to be.
She thinks she needs to say that she's a capitalist, though, because of all of the liberal kind of ethos around making sure that this, like, you know, free market thing can work itself out.
God. gotta revive this corpse again. Gotta do it.
Yeah.
Gotta do it. And gotta keep the billionaires here. Or they'll
right.
just leave. It's like, they're not gonna fuck.
We know capitalism's bad, but what about a gentler capitalism? You know, like a...
Gentler.
Aww. When you're making characters, And you're kind of thinking about, like, developing storylines, do you ever come from a place where you hear these sort of, like, you know, like a gentler capitalism? I can imagine, like, sort of morphing into, like, a character. Like,
oh, like what they represent?
Yeah. yeah.
I kind of do. Like, there are characters, like, that I kind of hate. Like, I try to write them sympathetically, but, like, I kind of hate their point of view they represent. But I usually ultimately, like, a lot of them come around.
It's very nice.
They don't
get guillotined.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I make converts out of them.
Yeah. Oh, that's actually an amazing exercise, though, because if you can, like, imagine a viewpoint where you're coming from the place of, like, someone you don't agree with, and then you're working through, like, the conversations you can have with that character,
mm-hmm.
that's sort of like, that's kind of a, I don't know, it's a beautiful way to think of, like, going around the world and just, if you do encounter someone with a viewpoint that's, like, kind of toxic to the way that, like, our beliefs are,
mm-hmm.
and just be like, oh, well, I don't have to other you, actually, because I've got all of this practice of, like, knowing how to produce empathy mm-hmm. and not, like, killing the character. And then also, like, walking them off the ledge into...
Yeah.
like a better place.
Some of them do get.
Some of them
do. Yeah. Some of them do deserve it, though.
Yeah.
Some of them are not stable.
Man, that reminds me of I think I'm going to post this picture when I post this episode. There's a great Art Young cartoon of a big fat capitalist, like, eating a huge bowl and, like, leaning back in his chair on the precipice of a cliff.
Oh, nice.
Mm. Just like about to, from eating too much, about to just fall over.
Nice.
I went away from the mic as I did that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine, if you will, someone falling over and their voice becoming distant.
I guess we should wrap up here. We're about out at an hour, but do we have any final thoughts?
I wanted to talk about Adventure Time.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah.
I was in the back of my mind too, dude.
I'm sorry. Is that really dorky?
No.
We have time.
I'll talk about whatever. That's what I'm here for.
Can I ask you how it was?
It was a good job. Like, I haven't really... I've done, like, some freelancing in animation since, but, like, I haven't worked regularly in animation since, and I do sometimes think, like, yeah, that's probably the best job I'll have ever had. I got to, like, work for other cartoonists who, like, respected me and wanted me to, like, contribute a personal vision to a show that, like, I had a lot of admiration for. It's like, I'll probably not have that again. That was great.
Wow.
That was really nice.
Yeah, that's just incredible to me that, like, I don't know, like I studied animation at SVA and like a lot of the industry scouts and everything that would come by and try to recruit people really like turned me off of the industry in general, even though animation is still like, I don't know, one of my main solaces in this world. But like, yeah, I don't know. It just sounds like Adventure Time was just this like such a beautiful collection of like not only people who cared about the medium and about how to bring a lot of talent in, but like that, I don't know, it just seems like really everyone who worked there felt supported and sort of I don't know.
Yeah. They took I'm really grateful to them too, because they took a huge chance on me. Like, I didn't study animation. I didn't know anything.
You're a college dropout, eh?
Yeah, I was at U of T for a little bit. And I
threw in an A.
Yeah.
A? What's that about?
Yeah. Gotta get that one in under the wire.
College dropout. And so I didn't know anything. Like, I didn't even really know, like, how to storyboard, how to, like, do a turnaround. And they, I didn't want to move to LA because I didn't know how to drive. And they were like, okay, I guess, like, sure, total stranger who's, like, 22 or something. And they let me, like, work from home and, like, taught me in the middle of a season, like, in the first few weeks, like, here's what you do, as I was sending them just incomprehensible drawings trying to figure out, like, what even the responsibilities of my job were.
Oh, wow.
So they, like, took a huge chance on me and, like, I'm, yeah, super grateful. And they did for other cartoonists on the show. So
how did they just find you online?
Found me through comics. Like, wow. Yeah. They, cause like everyone there, like either makes indie comics or they used to read indie comic, like whatever they, so they had all their tendrils in and they,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Valuable community.
Yeah.
Like pays off. Is there any chance of the like pilot you and Ryan Sands made ever seeing the light of day?
I think like a version of it might come out. So yeah, Ryan and I, we worked on a show for a long time that was, or not a long time. We had a show in development for a year that was about sort of like a hybrid of Drifting Classroom and this reality TV show that only lasted one season that I liked called Kid Nation.
Oh, where, oh yeah. Yeah. Oh my God.
Fuck yes to both of those.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, it was like it was something that we put a lot of work into, and the idea was like an elementary school as punishment for getting lowest on a standardized test score in the country are locked inside an abandoned shopping mall indefinitely to like fend for themselves.
Amazing.
And all the different like cliques like kind of splinter off into their own groups. But we wanted to actually make it explicitly about, like, we didn't want it to just be like a post-apocalyptic, they're all fighting.
Yeah, it's not like billion-dollar movie or yeah. Whatever.
Wait, which one's that?
Oh, that's well, the Tim and Eric.
Yeah, Tim and Eric, right, yeah. Yeah, in the mall with all of the wolves.
Yeah, we like wanted it to be, we, you know, because we were, it was in development with Cartoon Network, so we weren't like, it's about anarchy, but we wanted it yeah. to kind of be about, like, have these ideas of, like, mutual aid and the way these groups are very different and have maybe differing goals or interests, like, coming together to, like, start up a farming system in the middle of the mall, like, all these little things,
yeah, cool.
Like, the goths and the jocks getting along and stuff, but,
so
yeah, we were working on it for a while, and then it was deemed too scary by Cartoon Network, because they thought the idea of, like, kids being, like, we just, like, have this basic premise, but they were like, well, do their parents know that they're trapped in this mall? And I was like, I don't know. Like,
oh.
And they thought it was too scary, so. Or, like, the premise was, like, too grim. But, yeah.
Whatever.
Drifting give them, now that Drifting Classroom has been reissued so beautifully, just send it to them as a gift.
Yeah.
Be like, here you go. Yeah. This was deemed appropriate for kids.
Yeah. Consider this.
Well, Michael, so lovely to talk to you.
Thanks for having me on.
You've been a longtime supporter of our show, and we really appreciate it because we are some scrappy randos, and to have your support has always meant the world to us.
I'm a big fan of the show, yeah.
Yay. Oh, thank you.
And thanks for taking time out of your limited New York trip to be here in the studio.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure, yeah.
All right, everyone, find Michael. If you don't know Michael DeForge already, get on that. Come on. And let's have fun, everyone. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
I care if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy. It doesn't really matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. I really don't care if you destroy a truck. I care if you drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. I really don't care cause I just love your company. Let's have fun. 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 Lots of fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Lots of fun.